For more information on Ancient Dragon Zen Gate, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please visit our website.
I always appreciate the challenge of being asked to come up with something that hopefully will be both true and helpful. So thanks to all of you. Tonight I want to talk about something that is very common for all of us. And so, I mean, you know all this already, so you can just sort of think about something else right now if you want to. But because it's common and because it's fairly simple and basic to our practice as Zen students, I really look forward to hearing what you might have to say about your experience of what I'm going to be describing. And the topic is Zen and activity, Zazen and activity. I started thinking about this recently because I was reading a wonderful book, Living by Vow, by Shohaku Akamura, and in it, he either quotes or paraphrases, he doesn't say which, a saying from Dogen, which is, our Zazen is not part of our practice. And he goes on to say, well, he really might mean our Zazen is not part of our daily activities. But rather, other activities are part of our Zazen. That is what is meant by Dogen's phrase, our Zazen is absolute. Our Zazen is not part of our activities, but rather our activities are part of our Zazen. The first part of this saying, our Zazen is not part of our practice, or to put it another way, it's not just one of many life activities, points out, I think, the tendency, which is not necessarily a bad thing at all, I'll say a little bit more about that, to see Zazen and activity as separate things, that each has its place. And there are different ways in which we do that. And they have some value to at least begin this way, if nothing else. And one way of thinking about Zazen and activities in sort of separate ways is treating Zazen sort of like this, or life really, sort of like the Sunday newspaper, you know, a big fat newspaper with lots of categories. And so you have your business and your politics and your religion and your sports and your finances and your Zazen and what, you know, other things. And so it's one of many different activities. And sometimes we see Zazen of, well, it's just one of the many things I do. And in this way, it's not really seen as a lifestyle. We have a lifestyle, and then we do Zazen within that lifestyle. An example of that kind of thing for me is I really enjoy reading fiction, and I enjoy watching really good films. It isn't a lifestyle. It's not something that my life is centered around. It's one of the things that I do, and doing it has its influence on me, and it affects me in positive ways, and it enhances my life in some ways, and its influence is somewhat limited. Another way of looking at Zazen and activity somewhat separately is sort of like doing physical exercise. And I think for a long time, for me, spiritual practice was sort of like this, where, you know, you do a workout in the morning, and you feel better all day. And in general, you feel healthier all the time, and your health improves in general. But you do your exercise, and then you sort of forget about it. I mean, you're not exercising all day long. You know, you go to work, or you do whatever you do. You've done that. And daily life sort of goes on in its own way. Sometimes Zazen can be seen that way, practiced that way, where it's something that's done often in the morning, and then we forget about it and go about our life. And we trust that it will, in fact, influence the rest of our day, that we will feel better for the rest of the day as we do. And some people say, you know, I haven't sat for several days and I really feel it. In the same way that they might say, I haven't been exercising in the last couple of weeks and my body really feels it. And so it has an influence over us when it's, even when it's looked at that way. If daily life gets really difficult and we don't have a way of practicing that is congruent with our zazen, it can be problematic. It can be kind of a separate thing. We have this peaceful thing in the morning and then the stress of daily life with no connection. I think that perhaps most people who practice any form of religion see religious practice and daily life in this way, somewhat siloed. That, you know, meditation or prayer or other religious activities have their value, but they're not necessarily central to their lives. It's not something that is ongoing all day long for them. And it has been easy for me, because of that fact, and I think it is a fact, both in the East and the West, in every religion, it's been easy for me to be somewhat judgmental about it because I have centered my life around spiritual practices and things like that, and I've tried to integrate all of life into those practices and teachings. And it's been easy for me to be somewhat judgmental about people who don't seem to look at it as an integrated whole, but rather as separate activities. And, you know, the thing that's been helpful in that is that I've been humbled by the wisdom or clarity or love or whatever it is that someone exhibits that I thought was probably a somewhat superficial person because they weren't totally immersed in this whole thing like I was, you know. But by the same token, I've seen how someone who is immersed in the spiritual practice and they, you know, think about it a lot, even all day long, doesn't guarantee that they're the most awakened person in the room. And we all know about that. We've seen how I've also seen how spiritual practice, even if it's somewhat siloed in the way that I'm describing, can influence everything else over time. So that's kind of a caveat. Having said all that, some of us come to a point where we really want to be practicing with our daily life. And we want our zazen to be something that is experienced in action during the day. And there are different ways of doing that. Where we extend our zazen into the rest of the day and are more intentional about that. And I think in the Buddhist world, that desire, that bodhicitta, that impulse to want to live it hour by hour, moment by moment, may be more common in the West now than it has been in the East. I don't know. I've never lived in the East in a Buddhist culture, but that's something that I hear. And it's something that I'm aware of in a lot of Zen centers like ours in the West, where that is a pretty important focus. This isn't something we just do and then drop and then get on with our daily life and don't think about it anymore. It's something we have this desire to live it out. So how does that happen? Well, one way is a kind of interplay back and forth. And I thought of this recently. One of my sons has a new baby that's now almost a year old. And he was telling me just the other day that he's aware of how when he's with this baby, there are times he goes back and forth between feeling this kind of wordless, pre-verbal presence that is just kind of delight and hanging out and making little noises and, you know, hugging them and kind of looking at each other and, you know, the stuff that you do with babies. And between that and the more practical side of, well, he needs a diaper change here. I got to get some food. How do I navigate this current problem of not sleeping when I want him to sleep and so on? And so there's this back and interplay back and forth in his experience as a father between total presence and openness and more practical relationship of doing things together and getting things done. And that made me think of sometimes how Zazen and activity could be like that, that we, during our day, let's say it's 2 o'clock in the afternoon on a Tuesday and we're in the middle of a busy day and we look up at the sky. Or we just stop for a minute while we're stuck in traffic and take a few breaths. Or we see somebody who's a stranger and there's something about their face that strikes us. Where we just kind of open up and drop our stress, we drop our activity even, we drop our thoughts, and we're just present. In the same way that my son kind of goes back and forth between those two elements, that can happen for us during the daytime. And sometimes it's spontaneous, but sometimes we can actually initiate that intentionally. Some people do that with beads. They carry around beads or they keep them on their wrist or something so that from time to time they just touch something or go through a short chant sequence, you know, with their beads or something. Some people use their breath that way. Some people have certain activities that remind them to come back to being present in the midst of a busy day. Like, let's say every day they ride the L. And they think to themselves, I want to use this time as a time of meditation and action. And so when I'm on the L, I'm going to be focusing on breath and what's here in this present moment. Or some people I've known have put, you know, those little colored dots that you can get, you know, they put them in different places in their house so that every once in a while they'll spot something, they'll look at this spot and say, oh, yeah, right. And they'll stop a moment and breathe. Or some people I know use their ringtone or their notification on their phone that an email has come in or a text to do the same thing and just take a moment and sort of have a cleansing breath and remember and come back and sort of this going back and forth. So that's one way in which this can happen, where we have this interplay going on. Another way that may not be so helpful in terms of a way of intentionally being in Zazen throughout the day is to try to sustain a certain kind of feeling, you know, to try to sustain an idea of being awake and present. This can be a kind of attachment. There was a movement, or a tendency within religion that is sometimes called pietism. And I'm not speaking in the technical term of German pietism as a part of Lutheranism, but more being pietistic, sustaining throughout one's day a kind of almost unctuous, sweet, I'm going to be really holy right now kind of thing. And I remember many years ago, when I lived in San Francisco, this was 40 years ago, I lived in the Haight-Ashbury, and one of the things that, I don't know if they still have it there, does the San Francisco Zen Center still have a cafe, bakery in the Haight?
Well, they don't have, no.
Okay, but they used
they
to.
They own one, but right. It's not.
Okay, well, it used to be a street that you walk up and you go in and get your macaroons or your bread or your whatever it is. And it was the funniest experience. My wife and I used to joke about it because it was more than once. I mean, many times we'd walk in and I'd say, you know, you're in the city and they'd say, oh, I'd like two macarons and I'd like a croissant and I'd like a coffee to go with that. And, you know, you're used to people saying, okay, I got it, here you go. No, it was like, two macaroons. And they go and get them, and they put them very mindfully into a bag and bring it, and they kind of look at you and say, what else? You know?
Tigan worked there, by the way.
Oh, did he? Oh, and I'm afraid 40 years ago, he might have been one of those people. But we would joke about how this was a kind of, you know, attachment to a feeling, a form of pietism, sort of a form of Zen pietism that is trying to sustain a feeling of awakened, you know, being awakened. So that's not a very helpful thing, I think. And we're all warned in a lot of Zen texts to not be attached to either samadhi or awakening itself. There's another way in which people integrate, I think, which we integrate zazen and daily activity, and that is through sensory appreciation. And there's a lot in our tradition about that, a lot of Zen poetry that talks about things that we experience through the senses, you know, the moon on the water or flowers or the leaves dropping, as we talked about it in fall, that affect us. And it's something that brings little mini awakening moments, you know, for us in the daytime if we pay attention to it. And Thich Nhat Hanh, of course, is a great proponent of this in when he reminds people, you know, taste the food that you're eating and maybe eat it a little more slowly and feel the earth under your feet as you walk and feel the temperature of the air on your skin and pay attention through your senses. And that's a wonderful way, and we could use a lot more of that. But that practice isn't necessarily helpful when things get really stressful or difficult or confusing, when we're in the midst of a very difficult situation in the middle of our day, or just a very stressful one. How do we, you know, stop and look at the sky? I mean, it's not always the, for me at least, the best response. So I've saved the best for last in terms of what I enjoy doing and what seems to make a lot of sense for me. It's not the only way. All these other ways have their value at different times and places too. But that is a kind of way of integrating zazen and daily activity where the activities themselves are truly zazen. They're truly a part of our zazen practice. The activities themselves, the circumstances themselves. And to say a bit about that, I want to back up for a minute and ask, what is it that we are doing in zazen? In sitting still on our cushion, what is it that we are doing? We talk about awareness, the mind and body in awareness, uprightness, paying attention, being present to whatever that awareness, whatever comes within the field of that awareness, including thoughts as they come and go, our sensory input, a mood that we might have, sounds, but being conscious and open to that moment. And it may not be pleasant, as we are often reminded. It is what it is. We may be feeling terrible. We may have pain. We may be in a bad mood. There may be something that just happened that's affected us badly. But zazen is that act of saying yes to what it is and knowing in an intimate way the nature and texture of that, not in an intellectual way, but in an intimate way. What is this, we ask? What is this moment? What does it feel like? What is it? What's its texture? Well, that's something we can do all day long. And it's not dependent on having pleasant experiences or having beads or a mantra or whatever else. It's simply being willing to bring that same spirit as often as we think of it into the moment that we have. And engaging with phenomena and circumstances and other people and our own thoughts and our own moods, whatever it is, as they are, in our workplace, on the street, including internal stuff that's coming up, and choosing to experience it as it is and then make some kind of response out of that place of openness and willingness. That is zazen. I mean, that's what we do on the cushion, and that is zazen. It just happens to be done in the midst of action. I had this experience a couple of hours ago. I was kind of in a hurry and a little annoyed. I won't go into why. And I was driving down the street, and these two bicyclists were riding, two bicyclists, out in the middle of this very narrow street, slowly. And it was like, you know, there are other ways you could do this, and I was a little annoyed. And at one point, I kind of zoomed a little bit around them. It was a narrow street, and I came back around. My mirror hit the mirror of another car that was parked along the side. Oh, shit. You know, it's just like, oh, no. And I'm thinking immediately insurance, blah, 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 blah. And I started to drive a little bit, and then I pulled over and said, you got to deal with this. I looked down the street, and all of the cars had their mirrors turned in because it's a narrow street, and they park there every day. And so my point is that it was this wonderful Dharma gate. It was this wonderful opportunity to choose to be there and to choose to bring Zazen in the way that I'm describing it into that moment and feel the tension, the frustration, the annoyance that I brought to the situation, my foolishness in driving a little too fast on a narrow street, hitting somebody else's car, needing to leave a note with my name on it, what's going to happen next, how much is this going to cost, being present to all of that as a moment of Zazen. What is this? What is the texture? What is the flavor of this? Not what do I do about it, not what does it mean, what does it say about me, how do I interpret this, how do I keep from doing it in the future, but what is this now? Well, we can do that all the time, and it might be a moment of boredom, or it might be a moment of gratitude, or fear, or whatever it is that's happening, or another person that really annoys us. How can we bring ourselves into that moment? And so some of what this has to do with is dropping our preferences, not approaching life as how do I get what I want and avoid what I don't want, attachment and aversion, but rather what is this? Bringing curiosity into this moment. It occurred to me as we were chanting the Heart Sutra, it's a way of living out emptiness that we experience in Zazen. The emptiness of everything is changing and coming together. All of the elements of life are coming together at once and creating this moment that is constantly evolving. And there is no object and subject in that sense, and there's no permanent something there. It is just a flow. And if we experience that in the Zazen, that's something that we can also begin to look for in our daily life. What is the flow of this moment? We are all creating this, and we are all responsible for it in terms of helping it to be a more life-giving kind of moment for all concerned. And it's not going to last forever, and I just want to ride it consciously now with everything that's happening. And that's a form of emptiness in daily life. So I want to close and then have some discussion. I want to close with a quote from a paragraph from Hongzhi Zhengzhui, a 12th century Chinese Chan master, which is a summary of talking about sitting Zazen and then moving into activity with the same spirit. The practice of true reality is simply to sit serenely in silent introspection. When you have fathomed this, you cannot be turned around by external causes and conditions. This empty, wide-open mind is subtly and correctly illuminating. Spacious and content, without confusion from inner thoughts of grasping, effectively overcome habitual behavior and realize the self that is not possessed by emotions. Here you can rest and become clean, pure, and lucid. Bright and penetrating, you can immediately return, accord, and respond to deal with events. totally unobstructed and clearly manifesting responsive interaction like box and lid or arrow points meeting. So what is some of your experience in terms of zazen in activity and how it relates to zazen in sitting?
So I experience zazen as training wheels. That there is a training in stillness and the ability to tolerate the intensity of life, whether it's the intensity of my frustration, you know, like with a car or bicyclist. But there's something about that that feels like sitting zazen, you're kind of contained and it's kind of easy to settle with things. The minute I get off the cushion, you know, I'm fast, loose, and out of control. But there's something that zazen, you do it enough times, and it you have a sliver of a chance of settling a little bit, approaching every experience like one might approach an altar. That's one thing I think of, how I experience it.
One of the things that I really love about your talks, Brian, is that a lot of times you ask us questions. Like, the best thing for me to ask us a question about it. I really appreciate that. That's really stimulating. And for the Hongzhou, too, he's such an inspiration for me. I love that phrase that Zazen is saying yes to what it is. That's great. I really appreciate it. I had a lot of thoughts as you were talking, and I think to summarize them, I think one of the ways that zazen manifests in my life, because I have that same desire, and it's great to hear someone else articulate it, trying to live it out. What does that mean? Really, and even with the grittiness of life, like how do you phrase that up against it? Grittiness of life, how do you live out zazen? I think particularly in my life, it's learning the difference between reacting and responding. This process I'm constantly being ready to learn. There are some situations that I feel pretty confident in how to respond to. And there are some where I know that I have pretty deep knots, you know, to use kind of like a physical metaphor in. And so when one of those gets disturbed, I have a tendency to, you know, feel a lot of emotion and have a desire to react. And I think zazen supports me in not running away from that situation, or that mindset, or that thought, or whatever, but to turn to it and engaging with it in a way that responds rather than reacts. Because I know I'm committed to knowing myself well enough to know the difference between, you know, what is it that all the karma that's been planted within me. What is the program that I'm, you know, that I'm most adept to just sort of fling out, and what is actually appropriate to the situation. So having some training on trying to discriminate, for lack of a better word, what's the reaction, what's the engagement. Engagement seems a little bit more patient and usually brings a little bit more wisdom. even though there's a desire in me to have this sort of immediate gratification of the reaction. That's something that's tempting about the reaction, is that I react to it immediately, outwardly. There is that immediate gratification of, this is needing that. Sometimes that's not actually what's fair to the situation. I like that phrase a lot too. Kate Bornstein, who's a gender activist, it's a big inspiration for me. I noticed that she'll do that a lot when she's doing question and answers. When someone asks her a difficult question, she'll respond to it and say, "Is that fair?" And that always sticks with me. So that's the difference between reactive.
And it sounds like maybe what you were implying, correct me if I'm wrong, but it sounded like sometimes you notice yourself wanting to react, and you notice the knots, as you put them, that are generating that reactivity, which helps you then respond instead, perhaps.
Yeah.
And there's a... along that lines, there's a writer that I enjoyed at one point reading, named Gerald May, who does some contemplative writing stuff, and he talked about creating a contemplative space around things, especially moments that stress us. You know, that when we feel the body chemistry, which is wanting to react, just we can feel it coming on. To create a contemplative space with that and just kind of stop and ask ourselves, what is this? And that can lead to what you're describing.
I'm really interested in kind of fascinated by the transition between Zazen and then something that leads to the ritual of your life. I was thinking also about when I'm sitting and I have insight into something. And to a certain extent, I'm trying not to think about anything, but then thoughts occur and go here. But I know that in the big picture, as you talked about, my life has definitely changed from sitting.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very hard to pin down exactly how.
Yeah.
But then there's also this very local moment. Sitting and saying, oh, that's how I should deal with this or do this or that. And then I want to write it down because that phrase is going to go away. I want to say, shoot, I can't do anything with this because I have to actually let that go.
Yeah.
And then I might not remember it. And then it feels like it's always, I feel a cross purposes when that happens because I feel like, oh, this is all benefit. It's happening right here.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've been waiting for this answer for 3 days. And
right. Yeah. Well, if those insights are real, they will come back when you're not sitting. They will remain or return. If they're not real, they just might be the brain, doing its thing as we're sitting there. But also, I think it sounded like you're learning to trust the process of Zazen itself, that it works on you in ways that you don't have to be in control of and on your timetable or because of your insight. It still works on you. Okay. Yeah, sure.
I don't have one.
Oh. Okay. Well, then you're going to regret not having one.
I already do.
The fall for me is a time of defensiveness because the rats try to get back into my buildings. I don't know how they pick up on this, but they're already doing it.
Wow.
Whether they see pumpkins. It's hard to fend them out because once they get in there, it's hard to get them out. So I've got to inspect the perimeters of the buildings to see the worlds right there and I've got to deal with them. So want to use the word dimension in discussing how to relate Brian to your talk. If I'm in the backyard of one of the buildings, I can't see the front of the building. I can't see the alley because the garage is parked. I'm in an enclosed space in general because I'm in a yard and it's surrounded by buildings. And as I move through the gangways and into the front or in the alley or wherever it might be, I'm in entirely different spaces. However, these spaces are immediately adjacent to one another. So I experience my time or my moment in any given day, either two-dimensionally, and this is a cheap term, or three-dimensionally. Two-dimensional vision is to be in the yard and not to have a sense of the front yard, the alley, the gangways. When I'm in a more cognizant frame of mind, I'm aware of all those things at once. And then if I expand that, I go back in 40 years, 50 years, 1,000 years, 3,000 years ago in that yard. And there's an instantaneous kind of emotional response to that expanded consciousness that I also experience while sitting. And it's immediately available to me. So to me, it's a physical experience, an emotional experience. It's related to awareness of what's adjacent to me, but that I'm not cognizant of at the time I'm doing it or performing a certain task. So it's nice. It's nice.
Yeah.
Lever to push once in a while.
Thank you.